The following program is brought to you in living color.
My wife and I were given a gift bottle of wine. It hung around the house for a while.
The first element in the bouquet of wine is to get your nose down into the wine glass.
He's looking at you, kid.
It's The Wine Crush, the show that's all about the grape and the lifestyle it creates. Now, here's your host for The Wine Crush, Laura Lawson.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Welcome to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, your favorite Chardonnay guzzling diva, and you are listening to the show that's all about the grape and all its glory, all the vine, all the time, everything you ever wanted to know about wine but were afraid to ask. That's what we're here for. We're your online media resource. And I don't know about all of you out there, but I am slowly recovering from our Thanksgiving turkey day. Now, however, as I watch Kent in the booth, he certainly apparently has recovered. He is all bouncy and cheerful and mocking already, I haven't even gotten in the show.
I've never seen anybody throw headphones on as fast as you do.
Oh, see, it's an art form. I have to keep up with you. Wait a minute. I'm on the air. I've got to do something.
That's right.
See, that's what happens when you multitask. If you have a creative brain like I am, you know, you could actually work on the internet, answer emails, and, of course, talk to you.
And still fix a turkey. How does she do it?
I will say this for the record, whether it was the help from Richard, our favorite chef that called in, or whether it was the inspiration that we saw on all those magazine covers, I actually did a turkey this year. It was edible, it was moist, and it was a pretty brown color.
Wow.
Involving no spray paint whatsoever or gallons of water poured over it.
That's better than the turkey I had. It was a little on the barbecued and dry side.
Barbecued and dry, take it. Yep. You were cooking this year?
No.
Okay.
It was a volunteer turkey.
A volunteer turkey. That one didn't get pardoned, did it?
Oh, it didn't.
No. But it's always interesting to come back from Thanksgiving because it finally hits everybody. Now, I realize we have done a couple shows and we've talked about planning ahead for Christmas and we've talked about ordering our gifts and thinking ahead, but you get back from Thanksgiving and all of a sudden, it's Christmas. There are no two ways about it, no ifs, ands, or buts. It's one thing around Halloween, you can ignore the Christmas decorations. There are three radio stations in my area that are playing nothing but Christmas music. I've got people around offices that are wearing Christmas sweaters and are all happy and have light up antlers and it's not even December really yet, and these people are all excited about it. So
you want to just scream sometimes? I mean, these people who just seem to be ready for Christmas already.
I guess so. I think my hardest part with all of this is no matter how far in advance people start putting the Christmas decorations out, how much they talk about holidays, how much they talk about everything, it's not till around the 17th or 18th or 19th that I can really get into the Christmas spirit. And by the time I get into the Christmas spirit, I've been into the spirits a lot, and I have maybe 6 days to truly appreciate it.
Yeah, maybe that's it. Somebody asked me the other day if I had my tree up yet, and I said, yeah, it's up in the attic where it belongs.
It was interesting. You know, of course, I understand everyone has their different traditions, but we got out a little bit Thanksgiving Day after we had eaten everything we possibly could eat, and I was just shocked. It seems like every car we passed had a Christmas tree already on top of the car. And my question was, you know, is this just something the family can do to keep from killing each other? Is it a distraction? I don't really understand that.
They're bored.
They're bored.
After Thanksgiving.
They're bored. I wouldn't say bored. I have to admit, I ate so much of my turkey that I'm convinced that little chemical that's in there, I'm still half asleep from it. So it's definitely worn. Or that could have been the amount of wine I consumed for the week of Thanksgiving.
Did you make a pumpkin pie?
Did I make a pumpkin
pie? Yeah, or was there a pumpkin pie in the deal at your house?
I think so, somewhere along the line.
You don't like pumpkin pie?
I don't like pumpkin pie.
Right, okay.
And by that point, I had probably two bottles of Chardonnay and wouldn't have recognized one had it run screaming through the kitchen.
Because I was going to ask you what bottle of wine goes very well with pumpkin pie, but
I can't help you there.
It's too late now.
It's a little bit late. But however, you did give me a lovely segue because a lot of people, this is the time of year. I've given advice about wine forever. And for those of you who listen to the show on a regular basis and can go back to our origins, you understand the family I come from knows nothing about wine, doesn't like wine, doesn't tolerate wine. In fact, the only half of the family that realizes wine exists is because at some point they've made it out of various fruit that they have lying around in the garden. So this year I was determined. Like, okay, I'm going to be good. I'll help set the formal table. Everything's out. And I look around and it's just not right if you're having 10 people for dinner just to see four little wine glasses on the table. So I'm like, that's it. I'm going to have everybody have a wine glass by their seat. And if they want to put water, they want to put tea in it, so be it. Well, the last 2 days before that, I couldn't stand it. So I did go out and I got 4 different bottles of dessert wine. Yes, there is a point to all this. And so I got the different dessert wines. I got one that was red. I got one that was white. And I chilled them down. Now, some people are just cringing over the idea of totally chilling these down. But I figured it would be a treat for everybody involved. So sure enough, Thanksgiving came around. The blessing has been done. The wine's being poured. And I have my Chardonnay and my husband has his Pinot Noir. And we offer wine up to everybody. Now, surprisingly, everybody took some. And some would want red, some would want white, but I had these great little dessert wines poured around. And I figured, okay, well, I'm playing hostess, and I'm trying to tell stories and be creative and be imaginative, and all of a sudden, bap, 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 I've got my dad hitting me on the shoulder and waving a wine glass at me. Now, I'm absolutely floored. He's like, is there more of that stuff? I'm like, well, of course there is. By the time we got done with dinner, all 4 of those half bottles of dessert wine were gone. Of course, mine was gone and Pinot Noir was gone. So I have learned something. The most underappreciated wine when it comes to the holidays is dessert wine. You know, I've tried for years to get you to appreciate champagne, but now I'm going to get off on a new tangent and talk about dessert wine. Now, to aid me in that, I have an old favorite to the Wine Crush, Mr. Greg Allen. He is the winemaker at Dolce. For those of you that remember, to me, it is hands down the best and actually, it is the only winery that's totally designated to dessert wine coming out of California. It is associated with our fine friends at Farniente. So Greg's going to talk to us a little bit about dessert wines and, of course, specifically Dolce. But it's definitely something for you to consider, and we'll get a little deeper into dessert wines and how they can factor into your holiday season and how it invariably makes the day easier if you can make people drink some dessert wine. But right now, I do have to make my wine recommendations. I appreciate those of you who reach out and followed it. I also got some great emails from those of you who took my Thanksgiving wine recommendation and really enjoyed them. So it's nice to know that somebody pays attention to me, as Kent doesn't even have his headphones on.
I put them right back on. I am right back in the game. What did you say?
Absolutely nothing, dear. All right. My white recommendation is something that I recently had. In fact, I had it over Thanksgiving. It's a fairly new release in the sense of the market seeing. I have talked about Etude Pinot Noir. Etude is a great winery in Carneros. It's usually known, like I said, for its reds or its Pinot Gris or Pinot Blanc, if you can find it. But they have done a Chardonnay now that has gotten out into mass market. And it has the great Carneros flavor, but it's not overly oaked. It is not heavy. It actually has a great minerality. It's very, I'm not going to say light. It's just very, very delicate. You get a lot of peach. You get a little bit of lime on it. It's very, very user-friendly, and it's great for delicate meals like my turkey, which was so moist and delicate and perfect. It was a very good pairing for that. So Etude Chardonnay, it comes out of Carneros. If you can find it, definitely look out for it. It is a great way to introduce someone into Carneros Chardonnay without having them be overwhelmed. Not to mention, it is just really, really well-balanced and a really good addition. Now, something else I had over Thanksgiving, and our listeners will know that as we get further into the holiday season, even though I am the Chardonnay sipping diva, I do tend to splurge this time of year on red wines, whether it's for my family, whether it's for my friends, or the fact that even though I may be a Chardonnay fanatic, I do appreciate a really good bottle of wine. And in doing so, one of my friends, since I only have a Dairy Crate as a seller, had some 80s Behringer Private Reserve Cabernet. Now, we talk about aging wine. We talk about using it as a collection point. We talk about the fact that it has to be stored carefully. But there's a reason that we come to appreciate all these factors and see the effort that's put into it. Now, 1989 was not necessarily a banner year in Napa Valley, California. And this bottle of wine that I did have, Behringer Private Reserve 1989 Cabernet, you look at it, you think it's not a 90, it's not a 94, it's not a 97. How great can it be? This wine was absolutely fantastic. All the tannins, any harsh acid, anything had fallen off this wine. And all you had was great fruit. You had the great berry flavors. You had a little bit of chocolate, a little bit of cassis. This wine was absolutely phenomenal. And because it had time to age, it had that softness, that roundness that I tell all of you that everyone in America talks dry but drinks sweet. It was just a very luscious, silky wine. So even though you can't get a hold of 89 Behringer right now, if you can, I definitely would recommend it. There are a lot of deals out there as some of these wineries look at the wines from the 80s that didn't necessarily get great points. it is worth investigating. So here is my line for you. All the Behringer Private Reserves seem to hold very well. So if you're looking for a classic Napa Cabernet, definitely look into the Behringer Private Reserve line. But also, investigate your cellars. Investigate where you have put wine, where you have laid it down, where you've stored it. And check out and see what you have from the 80s. For those of you who have not touched them yet or kind of turn your nose up and think, oh, they're not going to be anything worthwhile, it's definitely worth popping a cork on, because I hope you will be as pleasantly surprised as I was. So there are your wine recommendations. I know they're a little off the cuff, little Etude Chardonnay, and basically Behringer Private Reserve Cabernet, but any reds you can find from the 80s, I think you'll enjoy. Well, we're going to take a small break right here, but when we return, after all, the show is about you, your calls, your emails, and everything to set the holiday mood.
Laura Lawson's got more Wine Crush in just a moment.
She had kisses sweeter than wine.
Do you owe back taxes to the IRS? Newsflash, the president has changed the tax laws, and now you may be able to pay the IRS less. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, the tax doctor can help you pay the IRS as little as possible allowed by law. There are new tax laws for business owners, the self-employed, even W-2 workers. If you have a back tax problem or a few years of unfilled returns, new help to save you money is now here. Call right now to see how the new tax laws can help you. Plus, right now, we'll waive the consultation fee and give you a free tax savings report. Attention business owners, the self-employed, and W-2 workers. Make this free call to the tax doctor now and learn how to take advantage of the new tax laws that may help you pay the IRS less.
800-281-7048. 800-281-7048. 800-281-7048. That's 800-281-7048.
Do you have an idea for an invention or new product? Do you think companies would be interested in your idea? Do you want to try to get a patent? Then call InventHelp now. InventHelp keeps your idea confidential and explains every step of the invention process. We create professional materials representing your idea and submit it to companies who are looking for new ideas. We have more than 9,000 companies who have agreed to review ideas in confidence. If a company shows interest in manufacturing your invention, we can negotiate on your behalf. We have helped over 10,000 clients receive patents. We also offer services including 3D modeling and animation demonstrating your idea, prototyping services, and we use state-of-the-art technology to show InventHelp client ideas to additional companies. Join the thousands of people just like you who chose InventHelp to pursue their idea. We are experienced. We are working for you. We are InventHelp.
Call us for free information at 1-800-542-6751. 1-800-542-6751. 1-800-542-6751.
Confessions of a Potentially Perfect Parent, brought to you by AdoptUsKids.org.
I might look like an adult, like a person who could possibly be a parent, but I have no idea how to talk like one. And everyone knows that if you want to be a parent, you have to sound good when you say things like, "Don't make me turn this car around," or "Because I said so," or "Don't make me come back there." I don't even really know what those things mean, but I know that I actually believed my parents when they said them to me. How did they manage to sound so convincing? Here we go. "Don't make me come back there." Ugh, no, that's not tough enough at all. Kids can sense weakness. "Don't make me come back there." Ooh, yeah, that's better. In fact, that kind of sounded like my dad. Weird.
You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. There are thousands of teens in foster care who would love to listen to you practice your dad voice. Call 1-888-200-4005 or visit AdoptUsKids.org for more information. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
Honey, put this on top of the minivan.
We're only going for 2 weeks. You want me to back the kitchen sink, too?
Well, is there room?
Hey, you guys, you going on vacation?
Who's that?
I don't know.
Because we're planning on robbing your house tonight.
All right, I'm calling an alarm service.
Wouldn't it be great if you could be warned of life's risks? If you have diabetes, you can. There's a simple blood test called A1C that can help measure your risk of complications from diabetes. Why is it important? Because more than 600 people every day die from diabetes and its complications. If your A1C is above 7, your doctor can show you how to lower it. If you have diabetes, know your risk. Know your A1C. Ask your doctor. Or for more information, go to www.diabetesa1c.org or call 1-877-TEST-A1C. Brought to you by the American Diabetes Association, Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation International, and the Ad Council.
Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and today, I guess for lack of a better topic, you can say that we are getting our just desserts here on The Crush. Well, it's always interesting to talk about dessert wine, and I'm going to start off this segment for the simple reason I have this question I've been holding on to, and it does kind of lend into things. And this comes from Catherine, and Catherine writes me from Kentucky. Catherine says, what is dessert wine made of? Is there a single grape that's always in dessert wine? Well, no, Catherine, it's not, and that's why it makes it so intriguing and so much fun to play around with different wines. There is no set classification on dessert wine. You can't just say it has this amount of residual sugar, you can't say it has this amount of alcohol, and you can't say it's made from this grape. Which means if you find someone who universally says they hate dessert wines, it goes back to my old adage, if you haven't found one you like, then obviously you haven't tried the right one yet. Now, of course, Dolce is the living, breathing embodiment of what California wines are as far as dessert goes. Chateau Yquem, of course, is the worldwide favorite when it comes to dessert wines. But literally, I think someone can probably try and argue this with me, but I'd love to see him try. Any grape varietal can be made into a quote-unquote dessert wine. I have seen Muscat. I have seen Muscadine. I have seen Black Muscat. I have seen Zinfandel Cabernet Merlot. I have seen Chardonnay, Semillon, Riesling. I have seen Pinot Noir. I've seen Cabernet Franc. I've seen Malbec. Now, the key is with dessert wines, since there is no real way to classify them, generally, and I do mean generally, this is how you can figure them out. Number one, they tend to come in a half bottle size or a 500 milliliter size, meaning it comes in 375 milliliters or 500. So they tend to be the smaller bottles. Number two, they do tend to put residual sugar on the bottle. And we're going to give our small little wine geek lesson. Think about it. When you have little Pac-Man yeast and he's fermenting the wine, he's going through and he's eating all the sugar. Well, if you stop that yeast ahead of time and you leave some sugar in the bottle, that's what's called residual sugar. Now, residual sugar, if you start looking at these small little half bottles and you start seeing residual sugar of 10%, 11%, 12%, then you know that you have a dessert wine on your hands. Now, some people are going to argue that it doesn't have to be that high and it could be higher, but ultimately, when you see residual sugar 10% or higher, then definitely it's going to be a dessert wine. Something else to look for, when you find half bottles that are marked Semillon, Moscato, Riesling, Muscat, then definitely you are seeing things that can be considered dessert wines as well. Now, a lot of people have different ideas on what one should be. The classics generally are Sauvignon Blanc, Riesling, and Semillon. Those are the ones that classically are found in dessert wine. But the one wine I was talking about in the earlier segment where my father just kept hitting me on the shoulder was actually a Ferrari Carano Black Muscat from 2001. Had the prettiest color on the table, was deep, resonated with a pretty purple color. But yet when you tasted it, you could definitely find the sugar in it. Now, granted, some of these wines you could actually double as syrup on your waffle or pancakes or ice cream. But for people who don't necessarily drink wines day in and day out, that is something that may appeal to them. Now, keep in mind as you do this, a lot of people will argue and say, oh, because they have such a high sugar content, they aren't going to have a high alcohol content. That can be misleading. I know that one of the wines I had on the table had 11% residual sugar and still had 13% alcohol. So be very, very careful when you're looking at that. So, Catherine, in answer to your question, just about anything can be made into a dessert wine one way or the other. So if you have a favorite varietal, I would encourage you, go out and find a dessert wine made like that. That way you can get an idea of what the true grape characteristic. Because let's face facts, you can just about do anything you want to with a grape. Whether you want to ferment it, stomp it, eat it, turn it into a dry wine, turn it into a sweet wine, it's entirely up to the winemaker and how much trouble they're willing to put into it. So, Catherine, I hope that helps and gives you a little bit of insight. Obviously, we'll have a little more insight about some more specifics if you'll wait around to the next segment of the show when we have Greg Allen. But actually, I am being told that we have a brave soul calling into the wine line. And for our listeners, just to remind you, 877-4-CRUSH-1. That is a great place to call and torment Kent and to ask your fine wine questions. All right. So right now we have Susan on the wine line. Susan, welcome to The Crush.
I have a question about champagne. I have received a gift, a Dom Perignon, nice, expensive wine, but I haven't used it. And I had it in a cool place for a while, but it's been in the refrigerator lately, stored on its side. How long will it last? What's the shelf life for a good champagne?
Susan, I like the fact you say you haven't used it. I didn't know wine was really something we could use and put back, like a pair of shoes or a tool or a pair of scissors. So I delight in the fact you haven't used it. All right, you say that you've had it. You didn't say how long you've had it. Generally, understand that champagne is like any other wine because it is wine. It has natural enemies, light, heat, vibration being the first three. So if you are very, very good and you've kept the champagne in your refrigerator, okay, fine. If it's been in there 6 months, then yes, open it up and drink it. However, if you've laid this down on the side in the refrigerator and have had it truly in a refrigerator for about 5 years, those slow vibrations can actually damage that bottle. So in keeping champagne, especially when you're looking like what you're talking about, Dom can keep for up to 50 years. It depends on how you like your style and what you like your flavors on, assuming it's kept correctly. My advice for those of you who have nice bottles of champagne, keep them in a cool, dark place like you would your red Cabernets until you think you're ready to serve it. And I would then allow it at least 48 hours to lay in the refrigerator on its side to chill it down to where it needs to be. Unless you're in my house and, of course, you wind up deciding you need champagne right now and put it in an ice bath with some mineral salts. But past that, champagne should be treated like Cabernet in the sense, baby it, take care of it until you're ready to drink it. Now, if you're also like me, you can tend to put it in the refrigerator and decide your company is not worth it, then I wouldn't leave it in the refrigerator for more than 2 months. It can be a little bit damaging. So, Susan, I hope that helps, and I certainly like your choice in champagne. But let's face facts, it's the holiday season. Go ahead and use that bottle. It definitely needs to see the light of day. Well, we're going to wrap up and take a small break right here, but when we return, we are going to welcome Greg Allen with open arms and ask him the remaining of our dessert questions.
Travelers, do you want to save money on your next flight? Then pick up the phone and call. That's right, call, because the best prices are not online. They're with SmartFares. See, SmartFares has special deals with the airlines. When they have unsold seats, they use SmartFares to fill them. So you get airline tickets at ridiculously low prices. Our prices are too low to publish online. With the extra money you'll save, you can book another trip or treat yourself to dinner or shopping. So stop searching all of those travel sites to find the lowest price on your next flight. Let one of our SmartFares expert travel agents find ridiculously low prices for you. Call SmartFares today and get the best price on your next flight. Guaranteed. Also, save up to 50% off business and first class tickets.
800-989-0233. 800-989-0233. 800-989-0233. That's 800-989-0233.
What would you do if you had to choose between the buffalo and the giraffes? Between a flower or an elephant? What would you choose? What if you had to decide between a 100-year-old tree and a 1,000,000-year-old beech? Between drinking clean water or breathing clean air? would you make the right choice? Would there be a right choice? Now there's a way to help. Not just one, but all these things. EarthShare, the world's leading environmental groups working together. It's one choice we can all live with.
This ad sponsored by Ad Council and EarthShare.
We are talking about our world today. Oh, and someone's on the line.
Hi, I'm Jacqueline.
Welcome, Jacqueline. How old are you? You sound so young.
I'm 8.
Oh, wow. I assume you're a student, right?
Yes, from Jefferson Elementary. And I have a question.
Sure. And what's your question?
We all know the Earth has 7 continents that currently carry 193 countries. Those continents make up 29% of the Earth's surface, meaning that the vast majority of our planet, 71%, is comprised of water. Taking into consideration man automatically adapts to environmental conditions, why is it that I need to take swimming lessons?
Are you ready for kids who eat healthy? Good nutrition can lead to great things. To find out how a healthy lifestyle can help your child succeed, go to mypyramid.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the Ad Council and USDA.
From the vantage point, Mafatu saw 6 war canoes drawn upon the beach. But what held the boy's eyes in awful trance were the figures springing and leaping about the flames, darting, shifting, bounding toward the sky. The eaters of men. Cannibals. Firelight glistened on their oiled bodies, on flashing spears and bristling decorations. Mafatu watched the strange scene, powerless to move, and he felt doom itself breathing chill upon his neck. In that very instant, he heard a crashing in the undergrowth. 4 figures were tearing toward him through the jungle. He could see them now. He turned and ran blindly down the trail, slipping, sliding, stumbling, his breath all but choking in his throat. Only one thought gave him courage as he ran. His canoe ready and waiting. If only he could reach it before the savages overtook him. Explore new worlds. Find out what happens next by reading the book Call It Courage by Armstrong Sperry. For other great book ideas, visit literacy.gov.
This is the Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and no, I haven't deserted you yet, but I have recruited some help as we continue talking a little bit about dessert wines today. Right now, it gives me great pleasure to introduce both a friend and one of my favorite winemakers in the Valley, Mr. Greg Allen from Dolce. Greg, welcome to the Wine Crush.
Thank you very much. Hi, Laura.
It is nice to have you back on the show. It's been a few years, and it's always fun to talk to you. I remember one of the first times you were on the show and you told that great story about Yellow Jackets, and every time I think about Dolce, I have to giggle remembering that story.
Every year, it seems that we're harvesting in a maelstrom of Yellow Jackets. It's just the nature of Dolce. When you leave the fruit hanging out in the vineyard that long, every Yellow Jacket's looking for a little sugar water.
I can just see you now. You're going to have these bandoliers of EpiPens just all up and down you as you run through the vineyards.
Long sleeves and a little bit of netting.
Yes, just a little bit. You give beekeepers a run for their money. Well, Greg, welcome to The Crush. It's a delight to have you here. Something we have not done in a while is talk about dessert wines. And I think all of our listeners know, as you well should, to me, as far as... well, basically anything but Yakim, and even then occasionally, Dolce to me sets the standard. Dolce is the icon of what everybody should hope to be if they're making dessert wines. So having said that, why don't you give our listeners a little insight into Dolce and the grape varietals that go into it and exactly what Dolce is?
Okay, well, Dolce is the only winery in North America that's devoted to producing a single late harvest wine. It's a sister winery to Farniente, Nickel & Nickel, and our newest winery called En Route. Dolce has one employee, that's me, and it has its own vineyard, actually 2 different blocks of Semillon located down in the Napa Valley, east of the town of Napa.
So if you see the only place Semillon's growing, you see one little man running dearly for his life, it's going to be Greg. Got it.
Let me tell you, I've got a lot of friends. You know, the last time I explained The operations of Dolce, somebody commented, it was kind of like flying a plane. You know, there's one person, lots of hours of boredom, but a beautiful view, and then a few moments of sheer panic as you're trying to land the airplane. So for Dolce, you know, I have the benefit of Farniente's vineyard management company. So we have 35 guys full-time year-round on that crew that know how to farm the Semillon and the Sauvignon Blanc to produce Dolce. I've got the benefit of the entire production crews at both Farniente and Nickel wineries to help me craft the wine. So I'm not alone. But
some days you feel like it. Now, for our listeners, I think our listeners are savvy enough to know that Semillon is a sweet wine unto itself, or sweet grape unto itself. But when you talk about Sauvignon Blanc, people kind of look at you. They're like, that's a dry wine. That's an acidic wine. How can that be in a dessert wine? So how does this happen?
Well, you know, people can make beautiful dry wines out of Semillon also. I think that you find a lot of blends of Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc naturally pairing to one another to make a nice dry wine. The important aspect of Semillon with regards to late harvest wine is that it is very vulnerable to mold and very susceptible to the development of botrytis. And once it develops botrytis, then the water that's in the berry can be evaporated out given the right environmental conditions. And once that happens, the berry shrivels and we get the sugar concentration and, importantly, the concentration of the flavors that we need to make a nice sweet wine. The Sauvignon Blanc's contribution is acidity, and it rounds out the fruit flavor of the wine.
And to keep it, I had described something earlier that there are some quote-unquote dessert wines out there that are better suited to be poured over waffles or ice cream. Dolce certainly isn't one of those.
I have to confess, though, on one very hot summer day, I poured a bottle of Dolce into my ice cream machine to make a sorbet out of it and enjoyed it that way.
Oh, I bet that was good. I'll have to ponder that for a while, the whole idea of it freezing. But regardless, that's what's great about the Sauvignon Blanc. It cuts it for being overly sweet, correct?
That's right. That's right. You know, in general, Sauvignon Blanc, in my experience, does not develop botrytis. It'll turn into raisins, and it'll get all kinds of other nasty molds growing on it. But I can't rely on the botrytis infection taking hold in a significant way on Sauvignon Blanc. So I generally harvest the Sauvignon Blanc early and make a wine that's slightly off dry. And then I wait later into the growing season, typically into November, for the Semillon to develop botrytis and get the right level of concentration. And then I'll harvest that fruit separately and make small batches of Semillon wines and let them age in barrel sur-lieu for about 3 years before making the final blend.
Now, I'm supposed to be good and talk about Dolce and follow on what I'm setting up for my dessert wines, but I've got to ask, with everybody screaming and hollering about all the problems they've had with harvest out in California this year, has it affected you and the Semillon at all? Have you had a problem with botrytis setting or anything?
No, not really. I mean, in general, the biggest challenge of the growing season was getting the right level of ripeness, but you know, in time for harvest and before the bad weather came. You know, the vines have a tremendous desire to produce ripe fruit, and it will happen. It just took time. This year, it felt like we had about 7 months of March weather.
Yes, it did. There's no doubt about that.
But, you know, and our Chardonnay harvest and Cab harvest were about 3 weeks delayed. But honestly, I harvested Dolce a week earlier this year than I did last year.
Boy, but there are a lot of wineries that could wish they could say that, without a doubt. So are you done? are you in barrel, or are you just still sleep deprived at this point?
Well, the answer is yes to everything.
Okay.
We finished on Monday 2 weeks ago, and by last Wednesday, I had everything in barrel, and the fermentations are at a very healthy place and still in progression. I expect the fermentations to continue through May of 2011, and then after that, we'll look forward to about 2 years of aging in barrel before I take everything out and make a blend.
So you just finished harvesting 2 weeks ago. You are sleep-deprived, and I can take advantage of you and ask all kind of fun questions and just love the answers I get from Greg Allen and hold you for ransom pretty much. Well, listen, if you don't mind, I'd like to take a small break here on The Crush. But when we come back, I'd like to talk a little more generally about dessert wines, pairing, and just some other fun stories you may have to share with us.
Okay, great.
All right, we're going to take a small break right here. But when we return, we will continue with Mr. Greg Allen from Dolce.
For pictures, videos, show recaps, and more, become a fan of Wine Crush Radio Group on Facebook.
If you suffer from heartburn or other digestive-related disorders, then there is a new, safe, better, and natural alternative to better digestive wellness and heartburn relief. Praxid not only provides relief of heartburn, but Praxid takes a 360-degree approach to support better digestion, protect you from harmful bacteria, and also balance your stomach to improve digestive functions.
We like to think of it as the multivitamin of digestive health.
It's the only product to combine all natural ingredients known for the digestive health properties into a single patented product. Praxid also comes in easy-to-carry packs. Praxid relieves, restores, and maintains a healthy digestive system. Praxid is available here for only $39.95. Shipping and handling is free, and your money back is guaranteed.
To take advantage of this special radio offer, call now 1-800-829-5735. That's 1-800-829-5735. Again, 1-800-829-5735.
Do you use the expensive blue or yellow pills to charge your sex life? Are you thinking about it? What if we could promise you the same results for less than $3 a pill? If you're paying $20 a pill for the other pills, you're getting taken to the cleaners. Call OnCall Pharmacy right now and save as much as $700. 800-884-7919. OnCall Pharmacy delivers the exact same results for less than $3. You'll save more than $16 a pill for the same results. And right now, radio callers will get 44 blue or yellow pills for $120 with free discreet shipping. You can save more than $700 off pharmacy prices. Call OnCall Pharmacy now and take advantage of this special offer. 800-884-7919. Charge your sex life now and save a ton of money. Call now and get your 44 pills and save over $700 and qualify for free shipping. Stop overpaying and call right now. 800-884-7919. 800-884-7919. 800-884-7919.
Mozart toasties are so very great. Kids rejoice when Mozart's on their plate.
They know they're quite nutritious
and so delicious.
They'll lick the dishes
and soon you realize how impactful your kids involvement in the arts can be. They'll get better grades, make more friends, and express their individuality. When they learn to play some music, act or paint or dance or write creatively.
Hot from the toaster and filled with the essential creative thinking skills of an 18th century musical genius, Mozart Toasties are an important part of an arts-healthy childhood. Studies show that involvement in the arts helps kids increase test scores and promotes academic achievement. Feed your kids the arts. For 10 simple ways to learn how, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. The arts. Ask for more. Brought to you by Americans for the Arts, the NAMM Foundation, and the Ad Council.
The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson, and with great hopes, we have Mr. Greg Allen from Dolce still on the line with us. Greg, are you still there?
I'm right here.
All right. Hey, Greg, I thought of a quick question during the break, and then I'm going to get off on something more generic. Do you make Dolce every year? Have the conditions allowed for you to make Dolce, or is it just something you make every other year?
That's a great question, and mercifully, the answer is yes. You know, we started experimenting with Dolce in 1986. And 1987, we made a few barrels also. Our first commercial release was 1989, and we've released a wine every year since then.
Ergo, Greg's still employed.
Yeah.
Greg still has a job. If we miss a vintage of Dolce, we may be missing Greg. Okay.
But the question has always been, how much do we make? You know, we've had the same 20 acres in production for a long time, and some years we've made only 500 9-liter cases off all that land, and other years we've made almost 3,000 cases. But on average, we make about 1,000 cases a year.
How many do you think you're going to make for 2010? out of this
you
harvest?
Know, if you made me put everything in barrel that I've got in barrel right now in tank and ran the bottling line, I could probably make about 1,600 cases.
Oh, wow.
Right now, I have about 11 batches of wine that are unique juice composition, unique fermentations. And once the fermentations are over and it stops tasting like a Hefeweizen, I will try and understand the true nature behind each lot and then begin assembling the blend. I expect most of it should go into the blend this year.
Well, we'll keep our fingers crossed. Well, also for our listeners, please know the final result of Dolce tastes nothing like a Hefe. You don't need to be comparing your beer to Dolce.
But that's the funny thing. It's just in the first year of Dolce's life, it has a very pale straw color, and it has a very strong pineapple fruity note and all the yeasty esters behind it. It really tastes like a Hefeweizen. And then in its second year of life, it sheds that pale color. It takes on a golden hue. And then the fruit takes a walk down a path towards its true nature, either citrus or tropical fruit or stone fruit like apricots are very, very common fruit descriptors for Dolce.
Greg, two of my dear friends in this business, one is Tom Mackey from St. Francis, one is Ed Sarraja, and their favorite lines are, it takes a whole lot of great beer to make good wine. And apparently, over the last 2 weeks, you've had a lot of great beer, haven't you?
That's right.
Okay, just checking. Right. Wanted to go down that road.
I would say that's a mantra that holds true on every continent that makes wine.
Yes, because I have to admit, first time I've ever heard Hefe and Dolce put together. Well, listen, this all started because I actually did Thanksgiving with my family. My family's not a huge wine-drinking family. In fact, they are more into the distilled spirits side of it. But I made a point this year of getting four different dessert wines, and I didn't care. If you're sitting at the table, you are going to have a glass of wine. You may need it to get through my cooking, but past that, you're going to have a glass. And Dolce was one of the wines on my table, but I had four options. And before the dinner was through, everybody had had a glass of wine, had had two, even the non-wine drinkers. And it made me start thinking, a lot of people make the bad habit of taking dessert wines. And those that are in the know, they may have it with some walnuts or some blue cheese or maybe some fruit. And those that who really want to screw it up will put it with chocolate. But I think a lot of people have a misconception about dessert wines that they have to wait to the end of the meal, then they can only sip on it. So I'm hoping you can help dispel that to our listeners and let them know that Dolce could actually go all the way through a meal. Yes or no?
Well, first I'd like to point out that Dolce is not just a breakfast wine. You can enjoy it at the end of a meal, too.
I have had Dolce for breakfast before, probably because I went to bed drinking it, and I knew it was the only way I was going to get through the day.
On several occasions, we've had put together a Dolce brunch where we've served a different vintage of Dolce with a different savory course at a brunch setting earlier in the day.
You've done a Dolce brunch at the winery, and I haven't been invited?
Greg,
now you're in all kind of trouble, son. There's just no two ways about that. But no, really, please continue.
No, it's been a very popular event at the South Beach Food and Wine Festival for the last 2 years. We rolled this out a couple years ago, and this is something we'd like to try in various markets around the country to promote Dolce. And the idea that a late harvest wine can find a place at the beginning of a meal as an aperitif with the blue cheese, as you say, or maybe in the middle of a meal with a roast turkey even, and then at the end of the meal, of course, with something sweet, or just by itself.
With something sweet, I do want you to help me reinforce this. I have watched this time and time again as I've been asked to help with wine dinners and help to oversee things. Why do people invariably assume that something like Dolce, a dessert wine, is going to go great with a chocolate dessert? What's up with that, and how can we fix that?
Well, people just have to learn through their own experiences what works and what doesn't, right? And I can't reinforce enough that Dolce is very, very difficult to pair with chocolate.
I think most dessert wines are very, very hard to pair with chocolate if you sit down and look at it. So if you had to think right now, I'll put you on the spot, what is your favorite pairing with Dolce that you've ever had?
Pear crisp.
A pear crisp.
Like a pear tart.
Well, you have to understand, when you say a crisp pear to me, I'm thinking, oh, I must have cooked it. I must have burned it to a crisp, and that's the end of the pear.
Something along those lines, even a spicy poached pear has worked very well with Dolce in the past. You know, the classic pairing is a creme brulee, but I like to swing things on the fruitier side and away from the creamy texture. But, of course, the creamy texture desserts go so well with late harvest wines.
And by the time you get to the end of the meal, of course, everything's just perfect. Now, question for you. A lot of people are concerned. I noticed this Thanksgiving, once again, for people who aren't comfortable with dessert wines. You know, you go around and you pour someone 2 or 3 ounces of wine, and they look at you and say, why are you only giving me half a glass? What are you, lush? You're going to drink it the rest of yourself? Why traditionally are dessert wines poured in smaller portions?
From my experience, it's that they're so concentrated in flavor, and the finish is usually so long and oily and watering and giving of flavors that you don't need a lot to be perfectly satisfied.
Of course, one of my dear friends I watched actually kill 2 half bottles of Dolce out at one of your luncheons one day. So I guess that's all a matter of taste before it's all said and done.
Yeah, well, we all have different levels of enthusiasm for sweet wine, I guess.
Yes, especially yours. Well, Greg, I really appreciate you being part of the crush today. I appreciate you explaining dessert wines. And, of course, I think everyone knows my level of passion for, of course, Dolce itself, but everything that y'all do, the fact that it's so unique and the fact that it's so special. And this time of year, it makes a great gift for people, especially as we go back to talking about buying the wine for personality types. But, Greg, I hope you and your family have a great holiday, and hopefully we'll be talking to you in 2011. And you can tell us how the 2010 fermenting is going along.
Likewise, Laura. Thank you so much for having me on. It's been a pleasure, and I would like to invite you to come out for a Dolce brunch someday.
I'll be there, and you better be there, and you get to sit next to me. We'll get that taken care of.
I'll tell you all about it. Thank you very much.
All right. Bye, Greg. We're going to take a small break right here, but when we return, we will wrap up the crush and plan ahead for a little more of our holiday seasons.
Need a wine recommendation for a party? Want Laura to address something on the show? Email her at lauralawson@winecrush.com.
An adult elephant can weigh up to 6 tons. The average person, 150 pounds. Ever heard of carfentanil? It's a large wild animal tranquilizer. Illegal drug dealers lace heroin with it. It can kill the average human. If you or a loved one is addicted to opiates, even pain pills, don't wait until it's too late. Call the Detox and Treatment Helpline now. We care. Many of us have been where you are. We'll take you or a loved one away from the drug environment to a place you can clean out safely. Plus, we'll work with your insurance company to make sure you get the treatment you need. And with a Family Medical Leave Act, you're allowed by law to get away for help without telling your employer why. Call now to save a life.
800-915-9734. 800-915-9734. That's 800-915-9734.
The IRS is the most feared agency in the world. You've heard ads from other companies offering to help taxpayers only if they owe over $10,000. Here at Platinum Tax Defenders, we're A-plus rated with the Better Business Bureau, and we're proud to be one of the only tax firms in the country who understands that people who owe less than $10,000 need help just as badly. The IRS doesn't care how much money you owe. They'll still garnish your wages and even seize your assets. So whether you owe just a few $1,000s or hundreds of thousands, call now for your free tax consultation. If you qualify, we may even be able to reduce your tax debt down to a small fraction of what you owe. So don't wait until the IRS seizes your property and garnishes your wages. Call 800-856-1330 and get your tax problem resolved once and for all. That number again is 800-856-1330. 800-856-1330.
As I went through school, one giant question loomed over me. What did I want to be? But in order to know what I wanted to be, I had to first decide what I wanted to make. I wanted to make more. So I became a teacher. Now I make learning a privilege, not a chore. And frustration, a tool, not an obstacle. I make working hard seem easy, and giving up impossible. I make an old subject feel like a fresh thought, and unconventional methods common. I make material things less important, and little things like patience and kindness count. I make weekdays more exciting than weekends, and classrooms feel like anything but. I make things different,
which is all I ever hoped for. I'm a teacher. I make more.
Find out how you can make more at teach.org. Make more. Teach. Brought to you by Teach and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to The Wine Crush. I'm Laura Lawson. Special thank you going out to Greg Allen of Dolce for giving part of his day and his sleep-deprived aspect to be part of The Crush and explain dessert wines to us so we can all get a grasp on it. And, of course, it's always nice to get, like I said, a very sweet perspective on things. But to remind you again, seriously, dessert wines, I think, fall in the same category as champagnes do, as ports do. People tend to overlook them. And I didn't mean it, and I'll get off on it now. When I was talking with Greg, once again, our theme for the holiday season is giving based on personalities, personalities for wine. And just think about those special people in your life that tend to be nice and sweet and delicate and add a great balance to your life and the people you'd like to spend the end of the evening with. That's a great way to look at Dolce, so keep that in mind. Also, keep in mind that Dolce bottle is absolutely beautiful. So no matter what, even after they're done drinking the wine, it makes a great soap dispenser, it makes a great cheese plate, whatever you want to do with it. Kent, you haven't been paying that much attention.
I did pay very much attention.
I do actually want to comment on something. Mm-hmm. I appreciate the opening of The Crush. And I did not know if you did that deliberately, Mr. Leslie Nielsen.
Leslie Nielsen, I did that deliberately.
Well, I do appreciate it. I'm assuming that most of our listeners are along the same age I am, and no one can forget all the great Airplane movies. And so, of course, a special tribute to Mr. Leslie Nielsen, who's made so many of us laugh and made all of our lives a little bit sweeter.
Absolutely. We tip our hats.
We tip our hats.
We raise our glass of wine.
Glass is. He definitely deserves several glasses before it's over with. So we'll all keep that in mind. Hey, listen, commentary on the phone call that we got, someone asking about the Dom Perignon. For those of you who are out holiday shopping, I don't believe I have mentioned this yet. Dom Perignon has a special commemorative edition out this year, and it's made by Andy Warhol. So for those of you who are looking for very unique and special gifts, go to your local retailer, especially your fine wine shops, and ask them for Andy Warhol Dom Perignon. It will come out as the same price as regular Dom did, but what this is, Andy Warhol had a great passion for Dom, did some unique labels, bright colors. It'll definitely brighten up your holiday season. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this edition of The Wine Crush. I know that I have. It has flown by and got me over my turkey. But here at The Crush, we always have to remind you to sip socially, to drink responsibly, to drink what you like, not what you're told. But most importantly, in vino veritas, in wine, there's truth. I'm Laura Lawson, and I'll talk with you next week.